Hey everyone, Mike here. A couple of things before we start the episode. First and foremost, this was actually originally recorded back on the 3rd of May during the early portion of the COVID-19 pandemic. Unfortunately, quite simply, where most of the world was either seeing less work or was more or less out of work due to everything shutting down, Mickey actually ended up getting more work piled on her, so we lost our editor for like 6 weeks or so. So that's why this is only coming out now. But on the plus side, we have had the opportunity to make a few changes to the show that will hopefully be rather enjoyable. Now, the second thing is you may notice that some of the comments made at the start and end of the show at this point may be a little bit out of date. I mean, most of it is no doubt still relevant, but if anything sounds strange, that will be why. And related to that is the fact that at the end of this episode, I announce our next review as being the 1984 film Dreamscape. That may not actually happen. I've just discovered that the original recording was corrupted. So I promised it, so we're going to redo it. I just don't know when it's going to get out to you. But with that, let's start the show. Episode of Real Geeks that is probably going to have the most amount of firsts in the history of the entire show.
Woo!
Including the longest single sentence I have ever opened a show with.
It sounded good.
Oh, I don't know. We might be able to challenge that one.
Oh, maybe. Give me time. I'll find a way. Now, I am, of course, Mike Montgomery, joined by Vita, as always, and Mickey was going to be here, and then she had a family issue about an hour before recording time. But we are also, as I said, a lot of firsts on this show, and we are actually joined by one of the stars of the movie that we'll be discussing, Red Spring, Alicia Kronheim, who plays Vicky in the movie. And and also wields the single biggest crossbow I have seen in cinema.
Isn't it cool? I actually got to shoot it for that slow-mo scene. It was awesome.
There are millions of them by now, maybe billions, all around the world. The food will run out for them.
There'll be nothing left to eat.
Well, what do you suggest?
A bomb shelter?
It keeps radiation and odor out.
You have to remember that the next time I'm fleeing vampires cross-country.
Get anything that might be of use. Whatever we do, we're back here before dark.
They're coming.
The door's built thick, but if they want in bad enough, they can get in.
Look out!
We have to get out of here.
Sun's going down, man.
We're fine by daylight. That gives us like 6 hours to find a way.
It is them and they want in.
We're gonna have to do it before the sun comes up.
Now, before we get into the good stuff though, one thing, just full disclosure, since we're talking about a vampire film, you're probably wondering why in the hell does that man have a stuffed adipose sitting on him?
Because she's cosplaying.
So, for those of you who don't know, this is Addie the Adipose, who is a kind of character slash side project of mine for about the last 7 years now. And she is also actually how I know Alicia, because I met her online through Addy after the release of her previous project, the web series Haphead, which, God, I need to win the lottery because I want a season two so badly.
Oh my God, I would love to do a season two. That's one of the best things I've ever worked on.
Just between the fact that we already know each other and I was one of the backers on Red Spring, I just want to put that out there before we get started. Especially since originally I wasn't even going to give a rating for the movie for that exact reason, but then we ended up being a little short-staffed.
What, you mean you don't want to rely solely on my rating? I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I like to pretend that we could be professional without eliciting too much laughter.
Pretend, okay.
Oh, it's not like I've openly called this show Amateur Hour on air or anything.
Gotta stay grounded.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Hi. My name's Jeff Sinisak. I'm an actor and writer living in Toronto. Back in 2003, I wrote a feature screenplay about a post-apocalyptic world overrun with vampires. Not the pouty, sparkly kind from Twilight, but the scary, we're gonna eat you and I promise you will not want to do this kind. It's called Red Spring, and it generated a lot of interest. It was optioned a couple of times, and at one point was almost made by Lionsgate. They just couldn't raise the millions they wanted to go the traditional Hollywood route. You know what? That's okay. Because while Red Spring contains an awful lot of action, combat, car chases, monsters, its heavier focus is on the dynamics between the survivors. And truthfully, I wrote it assuming we'd have a limited budget to work with and tailored the script accordingly. That guy. That's my doubts and fears. You know, the guy who lives inside my head and says, "There's no way we can do this." He's like a vampire. Trying to devour my dreams. Just ignore him.
So Red Spring is essentially a love letter to vampire films, with the idea being that vampires have finally just struck en masse and wiped out most of the human population in one fell swoop, which admittedly nowadays would not be that hard.
Yeah, it had a very COVID-19 vibe.
Oh, yeah.
Considering the current times.
I'm very glad that I had Red Spring to prepare for the apocalypse.
Exactly.
I didn't have to just have all those skills.
The movie opens with Jeff Sinisak as Ray, who, aside from being pretty much half the credits on this movie, is searching for his family because basically he has no idea if they're alive or dead. And the group that he's traveling with manages to eventually get out of the city where they meet up with Vicky, who conveniently enough is on the way to her father's house where he also has a bomb shelter.
Because he's a bit of a paranoid kind of person.
Yeah, you know, he always was. That's who he is, but a lot of people in America overstocked on a lot of things, and they're happy about it.
And trust me, it was not just America.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You guys are in Canada. I'm sorry.
Whole country. Which, oddly enough, is where Red Spring was filmed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm from Toronto, so all of my film credits, everything that I did acting-wise, was all in Toronto / nearby places. I haven't really done any acting in America.
Yet.
Until you win the lottery and I get that season two.
Exactly. Someday. So eventually everybody makes it to the bomb shelter. As is the standard of vampire films, there are injuries and death along the way. And at this point, it pretty much becomes social isolation, the movie, for a fair while. And that's where actually I'm going to end the plot summary, because unlike most of our shows, I don't want to go too spoiler heavy. Because unlike most films where, let's be honest, most people are going to go and watch them anyway, so we can say whatever the hell we want. I do honestly actually want people to go and find the movie and check it out. But one thing I did want to say before we get into thoughts is that, love or hate this movie, I respect the hell out of it, because as far as I know, and obviously Alisa, you can add to this, but this is pretty much Jeff's baby start to finish.
Yeah, he actually, I think he spent like 10 years or something writing it. So he wrote it, he played the lead character, he also directed and edited. I honestly don't know if he would take on that many roles again if we were to do a sequel.
Yeah.
He does have hopes for a sequel, but it like drained his life for an extended period of time. And I don't know what his editing experience was before that, but he learned a lot of new things, like the CGI and stuff that you see, like he just did all of that. And it's very impressive. Definitely a passion project for him.
Oh yeah. Absolute passion project. And like, literally I was looking over the credits at one point and it's like, Jeff. I'm half expecting to find out that he even catered the movie.
Well, actually, funny enough,
I can do that because I have help. A talented team of indie filmmakers who are as passionate about making this project as I am. I met Tom Antos back in 2000, back when he cast me in his first feature film, Under Black Skies. It was a World War II epic about fighter pilots, and honestly, when he first cast me, my doubts about whether or not we could pull something like that off on a limited budget came to the surface pretty quick. Only then they were shaped like this. But we did it.
One of the things that I had talked about in our Bloodshot review was the idea of sometimes there are qualities in a film where the best part is also the worst part. And where, like I said, you and Jeff carried a lot of the load, did a great job doing it. The problem for me was, as good a job as everybody else did acting-wise, I didn't feel like they had a whole lot to do, so I didn't really get to know any character and the characters aside from the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time that the inevitable death and vampire turning and so forth comes, I wasn't as emotionally invested as I would have liked to have been.
Yeah, I completely understand that. There were a lot of cuts in the editing process. This was, you know, as you say, Jeff's baby. So I think the priority was pushing the leads forward a little bit more. And I didn't even really notice that until I saw it, because we were so engrossed in it. We were in deep Kincardine for a month. We all knew the characters really well. So like when we were shooting, we were like, oh, that's going to be such a powerful moment between, you know, Lindsay and Reese and whatever. And then when I saw it, I do agree with you that there were certain relationships that weren't as established as we felt that they were when we were shooting it, which is a little bit unfortunate, but you know, cuts need to be made. Like it is what it is. So I think you did a good job of pushing the main story forward.
You know, like we've said, it is low budget, so it's not exactly going to look Hollywood like. And I've seen reviews where people did kind of hold that against the movie, but at the same, I think knowing it isn't, you almost have to kind of grade it on kind of a sliding scale. And for me, like with the amount of asylum films that I have seen, if nothing else, I have seen bad green screen, I have seen bad CG, and I do have to give Jeff credit. The lower quality, it does show up in places, but at the same time, it doesn't really like stick out.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. And like you said, like we've seen some really bad green screen. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I think there's a certain level of forgiveness when you watch an indie film. Just like accept it, suspend your disbelief, just accept that, you know, someone on his own created those vampires in a in his apartment, and it wasn't like a team of people in LA doing it.
No, exactly. And I think that also goes to the look of the vampires themselves as well. I think that, for me, that was one of the biggest instances of the movie taking one of its weaknesses and making it work. Because it was like, okay, we don't have the budget for particularly elaborate vampires, but let's stick with the love letter to vampire films idea and give them a kind of a Bela Lugosi look. And I think for me, with that in mind, I think that makes it work.
Great. Yeah, I mean, we kept it simple. Yeah. Like, a lot of us did our own makeup. They had contacts that they had to wear, but for the most part, we kept it simple. Like, almost like to keep it more realistic, sort of like a zombie apocalypse version of vampires. Like, they're not going to be these like big monstrous things. They're humans that were converted, so you can't go too far from the human form.
No, exactly. And also, even just with the dead bodies in the opening sequence, not super gory, but at the same time, it's like, I feel like that's more or less what dead bodies would actually look like.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't like blood everywhere, yeah. But it looked gross and sallow, and there were flies, CGI flies, as a matter of fact. I thought the opening sequence looked pretty good.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you, if those were CG flies, that is some really good CG, because I didn't realize.
Yeah. I figured maybe half were CG and half were, like, you know, real, so props.
Zero real flies were harmed in the making of Red Spring.
Big fish, little fish, cardboard box, stick it on your head and shake it up.
I do apologize, my allergies are acting up, so I'm a little loopy on allergy meds, but
that's okay. I'm hammered.
An actual dance?
Yeah.
But with Red Spring specifically, just the simple fact that I think there's maybe one jump scare in the entire movie, and it's a really small one, and it's not super gory.
Oh, the pharmacy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
like, I wasn't sure if you meant that or on the boat at the end.
The boat, I could see the boat. I didn't jump on that one, but I could see how somebody might.
Mm-hmm.
But just the simple fact that this is a vampire movie that does not rely on jump scares, does not rely on excessive gore.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's like, You're kind of just hitting all my checkboxes right there.
Yay! Story driven.
Yeah, like it's a good story. Like it's a good, if you wanted to introduce someone to the horror genre, this isn't exactly a half bad movie to do it with.
Hey, nice. Thanks.
Like I said, favorite of firsts with this show, and now our first movie pairing. Because I tried a little experiment last night where Vicky has a line early on at the house about how eventually the vampire food supply is going to run out and they're going to start to die off.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, when I finished Red Spring, I put on the 2009 film Daybreakers. where that line is pretty much the main plot of the movie. And you honestly could watch the two films back to back, and it's almost the beginning and the ending of the same world.
I've never seen it, but that's cool.
You have to ignore the fact that when Daybreaker says it's in the near future, it's in the near future of 2019. But aside from that,
I wonder if Jeff knows that, if he's seen it. He probably has. He loves stuff
like that. Yeah, probably, because, I mean, frankly, if I was to describe Red Spring to somebody, it's almost a prequel/side story to Daybreakers.
Cool. I'll message them after.
Nice.
Overall, I did enjoy it. I mean,
yeah.
The issues with the vampires, again, could be explained by it's a different strain, or it's not the vampires that we're used to seeing. But no, overall, I enjoyed it.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Really, as did I overall. And I think it sounds like this would probably be as good a time as any to go into ratings. Vita, do you want to give your rating first?
I'd give it a 3. I really would. It's,
what's it?
5.
Okay, got it.
So Canadian production, indie project. Right there, I mean, people are going to think, oh, do I really have to watch this? But no, I mean, it was cute. It was well written. And again, the main couple not falling into bed with one another raised the standard of it for me, at least. I watched it this morning before we did the review, so I would watch it again. And it is a good way to introduce a younger person to horror movies without smacking them over the head with everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, most TV does these days.
That's fair.
Yeah.
We all need constant unsettledness.
That's a word now.
Yep. Call me Webster.
I think for my part, I think I'm going around, I would say 3.5. Like I said, great leads. It doesn't rely on a lot of the cliches of pretty much every other vampire movie. Is it perfect? No. I mean, obviously, but at the same time, if you're going into a movie that was predominantly funded on Indiegogo with the expectations of a Hollywood blockbuster, like, I'm sorry, but I have questions.
Yeah, like, that's on you. That sounds like a you problem.
Exactly. And I'm also in kind of this interesting position where one of the things that came up during our review of the original Mulan was, would I normally watch this versus would I watch this because we're stuck in quarantine? And where Mulan, I would recommend without hesitation. This one, I think with Red Spring, just because the middle third of the movie is pretty much social isolation the movie. Like,
what a time.
Yeah, like, it may not exactly be the best of distractions right now.
Fair.
Now, to be fair, I don't have a lot of experience with indie productions. I think Paint Cans was indie. Gods, I hope Paint Cans was indie. It was, Paul Gross was in that one. And I have a major crush on Paul Gross. I've been watching him for, when did Do South start? But anyway, I would definitely put Red Spring far above Paint Cans. far above. I think Mike might appreciate Paint Cans. I would give it a 1.
suddenly I'm incredibly curious.
Paul Gross is the only reason I continued to watch the movie until the end. I can't remember anything other than Paul Gross was in it, and I think he was wearing white pants at one point in time. I can't remember the plot line of the movie. It was so bad.
I'm happy to be above that.
far above.
but in more general sense, this thing is, I think, pretty much available anywhere you can download movies.
Yeah, just search it. You'll find it.
And so, like, in a more general sense, I would say, like, absolutely check it out. If you're having struggles dealing with social isolation right now, then maybe you want to exercise a little bit of judgment here, but...
But if you want some sweet tips on how to kill vampires, if it comes to
there
that,
you go. Exactly.
I'm a girl.
Or, like, if nothing else, there's accidental film references galore. Because, like I said earlier, we have Black Widow. You could call the mud scenes a Predator reference. And Random Kitty!
Hi, Meowmix!
This is Eek.
Hi, I love you.
Give me your face.
Now as we wrap up, of course, normally this is the part where Vita and I would be discussing our outside projects. The problem with that pitch is the word outside. Of course, I have...
I mean, I'm hitting my wall.
I have Addie the Adipose with her t-shirts and her homepage at addietheadipose.weebly.com. Paul or Vita would normally be... I can't believe I almost did that.
I keep saying I'm going to start putting more of my product up on the Broom Closet website or my Square Shop. And I'm one of the fortunate ones. I'm still working a full-time job and come the end of the day and reading all the reports, and I'm tired and I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. So I think then now the weekends, I'm apparently going to be sewing more masks because people have been asking for them. So I'm going to start production up on that, I think. But, yeah.
And now as far as other projects go, this is the part where Alicia puts the both of us to shame.
Well, some of you may not know, I'm a personal trainer in New York City. And I actually have a fitness, nutrition, and comedy podcast you can find on Spotify, Deezer, and iTunes. It's called Muscle Spasms. You can find us on Instagram at muscle.spasms. And you can find me personally at Elysian Form, ELYSIAN.FORM. And the past two episodes that we recorded have been very quarantine specific, giving tips on mental health, maintaining your motivation, and just little things that you can do to stay sane and happy. So I think that applies to everyone. So you should check it out.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And with that, stay tuned for our next episode where, as much as I haven't had the chance to tell the rest of the cast this yet, but we'll be going back to 1984 to review the film Dreamscape.
Yay!
Because I've already given Mickey her dream review, which should be going up, where we discussed the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And what's probably going to be an extended episode, because we all collectively lost our minds for the entire review. Until then, of course, thank you for joining us, Alicia.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Nice to finally meet you after like 5 years.
I know. I've been Twitter sisters with Addie forever, and I don't even use Twitter anymore.
the Twitter sisterhood is pretty much like the mafia. Once you're in, you're not getting out.
Thank God.